What does the Barbenheimer box office mean for the future of movies? We answer that question and more this week on Only Stupid Answers. Hello, everybody. And before we get into this week's episode of Only Stupid Answers, obviously, there's been, if you've been online or you've been following the strike, obviously, there's a lot of discourse on what people are or are not talking about. And that's going to be different for different people. But as far as this show is concerned, I'm not SAG, I'm not pre-SAG, I'm not any union, but I do support the strike. And so while when I tweet stuff occasionally, I might, you know, I'm still watching things, so I might tweet about my general thoughts. Roxy is pre-SAG, so situation's a little bit different for her. So for the show, out of an abundance of caution and solidarity and support, we're going to be pivoting a little bit towards more less of our like reviews or diving deep into movies and more general talk about stuff like the strike on how that might be impacting things, maybe sometimes a little bit of the box office. Also, Aliens probably in the coming weeks. Right, Roxy?
Yes. Because in the same way, do you remember, I couldn't stop watching on YouTube the Johnny Depp Amber Heard trial giving you updates.
Yeah.
When I was watching this 2.5 hours of Aliens, it was 500,000 people were watching it.
Yeah.
Live.
Yeah.
And it's the biggest event of our lifetimes, and you're not taking it seriously, DJ, and that's going to have to change.
I am taking it very seriously. I'm just coming to different conclusions than you, but that's a later episode. So the point is, just for the time being, we're going to pivot to some different stuff. But fortunately, you all, if you've been listening to the show for a while, you know, back in the day with Sam, we like talking about cryptids and shit and all that stuff. So this is in line with what we've been doing. Nothing different there, but, and of course, Roxy mentioned before we were recording this part of it that, like, you know, subject to change, we're getting new information all the time, we're playing it by ear, but for everybody that's sticking with us, I think we got some fun stuff planned to talk about, so stay tuned for all that. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Only Stupid Answers. This is the show where we answer your questions about movies, TV shows, comic books, who is mommy and daddy. With me, I'm your host, DJ Wooldridge. With me as always is Roxy Stryer. Hi, Roxy.
Hi.
And today we have a very special guest. Lon is joining us again.
Hey, I'm here.
How you doing, I'm man? Mother. You are my Lon is mother today. Roxy is daddy, and I'm your creepy uncle. I don't know.
No. If I'm daddy, you can be zaddy. That's
okay. Thank you. That's thank right. you. Thank daddy. You. I'm your fun. I'm the fun uncle.
Funkle.
Lon, before we get it, we got so much to talk about today. So much bullshit to wade through. Before we get into that, what are you up to? What are you doing? What should the kids be checking out?
Oh,
who are you? Where can they find you?
Who am I? My name is Lon.
Yeah.
You could find me on Twitter or X. You could find me on X at LONS. You could still call it Twitter. I think we're still calling it Twitter. Yeah. I'm on all the other ones too. Mm-hmm. And I got Lons on most of them. So you could find me on Blue Sky there if you're there instead. And I write for Honest Trailers. I write for Some More News. I write for a bunch of different, I've done stuff for Rotten Tomatoes in the past. Fandom, you've seen me around.
Check all that out. If anybody's sitting on a Blue Sky invite, that's one of the ones I think
I am sitting on a Blue Sky invite. So
well,
we can
listen. I would like to plant my flag, please.
It's such a ghost town over there.
It's like an arms race, Lon. We all gotta get our handles before they're all taken up to see who. I'm bummed because I feel like Threads is gonna be the one, but it's like I don't want to give another win to Zuckerberg, man.
I think Threads had that advantage of everybody's already on Instagram, so it was so easy to just like bloop, I'm on Threads now because you were already in the system, but it sucks. I think most people recognize that it sucks. And most of the people being active over there are brands. Like, I don't know. I don't feel like I've seen the X killer. I'd love for there to be one because I think the guy who owns X is bad. But so far I haven't opened one and played around with it and been like, yes, this is capturing the X experience I love.
The X experience.
Yeah. Like a minute into the show, and so far I've just been on such an opposite page of both of you guys.
Wow, you know, you love Threads,
you love X.
Yeah. Yes, yes, and yes. I'm on Big Sky also. I didn't know we got invites. If I have one, yeah. Yours, DJ.
Thank
go
you.
Go to your profile, and you'll see, like, if you go to your profile page, right under your name, you'll see a little blue box, and it'll tell you how many invites. Like, once every 2 weeks, I think, you get one new invite for somebody.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, DJ, I'm happy to give it to you.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
I haven't skied anything yet, but I am on there for the exact reason.
Yeah, I think that's the problem. Everybody's going over there and grabbing their plot of land, but I don't think people are participating yet, and that's the problem.
So yeah. Threads, I'm loving. Like, couldn't be loving it more. It's like reading old school blogs.
Yeah, it's exactly.
People are using it but it's still not doing what I need it to do, which is have news and hashtags. Those are the two reasons I use Twitter. X.
Yeah. Exactly. It's not replicating the experience, but as its own thing, it's sort of fun. I mean, it reminds me a lot of Facebook and Instagram. I don't know if it's different enough, but it's fine. It's just not an X killer, at least not yet.
Elon Musk is the X killer. I think we can all agree on that.
Elon Musk is the Twitter killer. Twitter's killer, not dead. And it's X.
And it's being resurrected as X, like the Phoenix coming out of the ashes. If when you saw the Phoenix, you were like,
Before we move on, you guys read that thing about PayPal, right? Back when he owned PayPal.
We're going to get into it. Don't get ahead of me, Lon. I was trying to get some good article sources for it, but all of them were like, subscribe to it. And it's like, come on. I'm not going to do that. Sorry, New York Times. Not going to do it. Before we get into that, little business up top. Of course, if you want to watch the show live, if you want to listen to it ad-free, if you want to check out, Roxanne and I are going to be doing some FAQ episodes. Spider-Versity, that's all I do. You can do over that at patreon.com/onlystupidanswers. If you listen to this on Spotify, every week we ask a question. Last week's question was, who do you think the villain of Superman Legacy should be? Merrick said, I think it's going to be a few minor villains, and the whole movie is going to be snippets telling this Superman's various adventures leading up to now as the introduction to DCU. And Stormy Wood says, I wish it weren't another Lex, but I think it will be. I would rather see Brainiac. Lon, do you have a horse in the race of who you think the Superman Legacy villain should be?
That quote could have come directly from my own brain. That's exactly how I feel. Like, I love Lex Luthor as a character. Yeah. It's not an anti-Lex thing. I think Gene Hackman absolutely killed it. Classic movie performance. Love that guy. Love that role. But it's like, it's enough already. Every Superman movie, we get a Lex Luthor story, and he's got a classic rogues gallery. There's no need to keep going back. In fact, Lex Luthor is like a weird, almost like a mismatched villain, because he's just like a normal smart man.
Yeah.
And Superman has a lot of foes that are actual physical matches for him.
Yeah.
Why not use one of those? And personally, again, if you're going to just ask me, Brainiac seems like the obvious one, just because he's so iconic.
Yeah.
There's so much iconography. There's so many trappings. There's so many different things you could do with Brainiac. It's just a famous name. He's an imposing looking character. It would be a cool casting thing like that. I think that's how you would go if it was me.
Totally with you. I do think Lex can still be there, because I'm a big proponent of, like, Lex is kind of part of Superman's support. He's not Joker. He's part of Superman's supporting cast too. But it's like, if you're main villain,
right,
it's like, come on.
Him. There's a LexCorp in this world. Sure.
Yeah.
Fine.
Yeah. But like, we haven't, it's been 70 years. We need to do a Lex. We need to do Brainiac. We need to do, come on, man. It's been 70 years. We haven't done one. So now listen, we were already starting to talk about it. Let's go right into it. This is our news talk. It's going to be a kind of a news centric episode this week, but let's figure out, let's try and dial in. Why X? And Lon, you mentioned the PayPal of it all. The Cliff Notes version I got is that Elon tried to do the same thing with PayPal, because he keeps using the term everything app. I don't know what he means when he says that.
He doesn't know what he means either. Linda Yaccarino, the new CEO of Twitter, there was just a story this morning where she was in a meeting with people from CAA, the agency.
Yeah.
And she was like, what would you guys like to use X for? And they were like, well, what kinds of things are you planning to do? And she was like, what kinds of things do you want it to do? And like, I don't think they have a plan. I think they are like, we've got to get advertisers back. Elon's plan apparently was forget advertising. I'm going to sell subscriptions, and that's how we're going to make money. Did not work. So now they've got to somehow get all these advertisers back that they scared off or chased off with all the Nazism. And so I guess this is part of the plan. I don't understand what he's thinking or pitching or what the plan is. It seems like he's got a very like middle school boy sensibility. Yeah. And it's just a lot of that. Like, we're going to make you can only use the website in dark mode, man. And it's called x.com, dude. And it's like all of these things that we're supposed to think are cool, but that don't actually seem cool to an adult.
Yeah, it is interesting because, so he was trying to, my understanding is he was trying to make it into PayPal, and all the, basically, reading about it was like, oh, this is an episode of Succession. It turns out some of the more far-fetched things I saw in Succession actually are things that happened because they got the board together and they're like, well, this guy, right? We can't let this happen.
He wanted to rename PayPal x.com back in the day, and everybody else was like, but PayPal actually communicates
a thing.
Where your pal, you use to pay for things.
Yeah.
And X is just like, it sounds like porn or brand X or whatever, you know? It doesn't communicate anything.
This is what he said, Elon, and then I'll give you guys my thoughts. Twitter was acquired by X Corp both to ensure freedom of speech and as an accelerant for X, the everything app. The Twitter name made sense when it was just 140 character messages going back and forth, like birds tweeting. But now you can post almost anything, including several hours of videos. In the months to come, we will add comprehensive communications and the ability to conduct your entire financial world. That is what Elon said. So
he's saying be your bank, like you'll do your banking through X.
Here are my brief thoughts on this. It is miraculous that this is one of the richest people on the planet. when you think about it, it is both infuriating and hysterical. He is like a classic movie villain. Mm-hmm. As you guys were just talking about Lex and Brainiac, I'm just sitting there like, Elon. I mean, it's Elon, like, except for the fact that he's not that smart.
Mm-hmm. Right, like Lex is actually a genius.
Smart, right? And so it is just wild that he comes out with these statements. And when you really try to break that down, okay, to ensure freedom of speech, we know this is the guy who made it so that you can't use the term cisgender on the platform.
Yeah.
So what is freedom of speech to you? Like, obviously you don't believe that freedom of speech is what I believe freedom of speech to be. So
he just banned that ad. Did you see that ad where the couple is about to have sex and then the Republican congressperson comes in and interrupts them? It was like a political ad.
Yeah, it was running last few weeks.
Yeah, he banned it, so they can't run that ad on X anymore. The freedom of speech app, you know.
Right. So it's freedom of your speech and people who speak like you speak, which is unbelievable. Okay,
freedom
so that
to call me anti-Semitic slurs is how it's that's right. how de facto that's how it's worked out is it's the freedom to say the K word to me every day, just about every day. Like that's
so freedom. The amount of swastikas I get sent every single day is unbelievable.
And that is just an anecdotal thing that if you are a member of any kind of group that gets targeted by those kinds of people, you have seen that skyrocket in the last year. I mean, it was always a thing on Twitter every once in a
while. Because freedom of speech, Lon. Right.
Yeah, every once in a while, someone would call me a Jew boy or something. Yeah. Listen, these things happen. But now it's all the time. It's a constant wave.
Yeah, you'll all be surprised to learn. I haven't noticed that. That hasn't changed my experience at all.
So that's weird. The first part, breaking this down. The second part, like birds tweeting. Mm-hmm. Okay. I feel like he typed that and thought he was so clever. Logo was a bird. You guys are like birds going back and forth.
Well, that was the idea though. Like that the Twitter home logo is a birdhouse and they're called tweets. And it was using like a birds tweeting kind of overall metaphor.
I think that was when we all liked the app. So now he's saying
still what we use it for, right? I'm not posting multiple hours of video.
Several hours of video. I have never heard anybody wanting that ever on the app.
Yeah.
It's just when the people post like hell with it. Here's the entire Super Mario Brothers movie. That's the only time you hear about people posting multiple hours.
And then in the months to come, we will add comprehensive communications. So what is comprehensive communications?
I don't know.
I have no idea. And the ability to conduct your entire financial world. Unbelievably scary.
Yeah.
So that app that goes down all the time and is just like, sorry, your rate limit is exceeded. Like, that's where I want to put my money.
Yeah.
You know, the app where we took away your two-step authentication because we wanted you to have to pay for it.
Yeah.
So everybody's getting hacked on there. That's where you're going to do your entire financial world.
You're not on board with that, Roxy?
I don't even understand what this, like, some, he writes things and I know that ignorant people and assholes both are like, he's so smart. Read what he's actually saying. What the fuck are you talking about? What are you talking about? Those words don't make sense. We're going to introduce comprehensive communications. Oh, what? What are you introducing?
Yeah.
You keep calling this the everything app, like Lon alluded to. What is that?
I do love this billionaire instinct to like, hey, we had this thing that served a specific purpose and we broke that. And so now, because this gives me very much vibes of like Max, like, hey, you know, the HBO brand used to mean something. And so now, but we don't want that. So now here's Max. It's like, well, yeah, but why? Because he's describing, yeah, here's what you use Twitter for. That was great. Fuck it. Yeah. And it's like, why do this?
You're both Succession viewers, right? Like,
yeah.
in the final season when they're making that like senior retirement living place, Kendall's like, I have, for my own personal reasons, I need to boost the stock price. So we're going to reinvent this, what was a retirement living thing, and now it's everything. IP branded future technology, cutting edge. Just not ever planning to actually build that dumb product, but just to goose the stock price short term so we can rat fuck Alexander Skarsgård. And I feel like that's the only thing these guys really know how to do. They don't really know how to build like long-term sustainable good businesses. They know how to like quickly boost a stock price by saying something crazy that makes investors go nuts and want to, you know, like they know how to play that game. And everything has just become that game, that like 4D chess manipulating everything, and nothing anymore is about like, are people going to like this? Is this something people want to buy? Is this something people are going to spend money on? Like, that doesn't even get considered.
I'm glad we've built our whole culture around this. This is great, especially as we face like long-term.
Short-term stock boost. That's all we're chasing. Nobody's like, but in 5 years, is this a real thing that people will want? Like, that doesn't matter.
And it's not like we're like one of the UN people came in and was talking about global boiling or other long-term issues that we could really just use somebody that can think long-term for once.
How is that going to boost Comcast stock in Q3? It's not, then forget it. It doesn't exist. Like, that's literally the approach of everybody now, and it's pretty frightening.
Ooh. What do you think? It seems like you have something you want to say, Roxy. What are you thinking?
Just looking into, like, remembering the name of his kid, whose name I've never been able to pronounce, the X-A-E-X-A.
Oh, right. Yeah. X squared, whatever, square root, Grimes baby.
Yeah.
So.
Should have just gone Grimes 2 or something. That would have been
Grimes squared.
It's like
the next Grimes.
I was under the impression that Elon was like on the toilet and was like, we should call this X. But the scariest parts about all of this is looking into like how long it took him to make this decision, right? Like they're not rash decisions. They're thought out decisions, which is just so much worse. So he reacquired X.com months ago and then changed it legally to X Corp or whatever it was. And then
there are potentially underhanded reasons to move company names and stuff too. I mean, he saddled Twitter with a ton of debt, and I was reading people being like, this might all be a plan to like, one division goes bankrupt and the other bails the other. He could have some financial maneuvering, manipulating thing, which is the reason for X.com. Like, that's why Google is now like alphabet. Like, there's no alphabet. It's Google. You're still Google. You just might as well call you.
Yeah.
It's all, there's all sorts of like weird, crazy SEC stuff going on with some of this too. Potentially. I don't know if that's it. But
this guy, John Ehrlich, put out a tweet saying all the companies that have changed their names, which I didn't know half of these. Kind of fun. Do you guys know what Best Buy was called?
No.
Sound of Music.
I knew Best Buy had a crazy, crazy name. How do you ever open a store called Sound of Music and not immediately get sued? Like, that's a famous name of a thing. You can't use that.
Yeah.
You know what Google was called?
No.
Back Rub. Seems really strange.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Do you know what Pepsi was called?
Ryan Soda or something?
Brad's Drink.
Yeah. Brad's Drink. Yeah,
Brad's Drink.
Great. Target.
I love that because then you picture a guy, like I picture a guy, like a big guy in overalls with like, he's got like a 2x4 that he's using to stir. Like,
sir,
like
the
a
thing is, listen, this is Brad's Drink.
I don't know why.
Drink.
It's such a casual toss up. Hey, Brad's Drink. You just think of like a guy in like a shitty apartment, like mixing up Brad's Drink.
These are all so great. Target was called Goodfellow.
Mm-hmm.
Starbucks was called Cargo House. Snapchat was called Peekaboo.
7-11. I remember when Snapchat was Peekaboo, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
When it first launched, it was Peekaboo.
Nike was Blue Ribbon Sports. Instagram was Bourbon. I don't remember that at all.
No, I don't remember that. It must have been like before the acquisition.
Whatever. Just interesting. That doesn't make me think that this is any less stupid, but just
Well, and it's interesting. All those were before they were the known brands. It's not like Best Buy changed its name to Brad's Drink or whatever.
Right. Well, and like Best Buy launched as a music store, so Sound of Music made sense, but then it became like an electronics thing. So you had to like all of those, like, well, yeah, I get why Brad's Drink is not in grocery stores worldwide, but
I feel like Backrub is my favorite. Like Google was like, yeah, Backrub. That's good. It's like, what happened there? That's crazy.
That's really unsettling. But like Twitter is, it's already the thing you want from a brand. It's already achieved brand nirvana, which is that it's become a verb. That's like, would you Xerox this for me? Hey, tweet this. Like, that's the hardest thing to do. And they already did it. Why would you get rid of that?
Because you're big.
Now you have to make KX this for me into a thing, and that's never going to be a thing.
That's never going to because he's a big dumb dummy. In the chat, for those watching live, Mike Joy says, "How long until he changes his name to X?" And Leonard Kim says, "I do kind of miss when tweets were eating a bagel, taking shit, or bought a computer. It was a simpler time."
That is kind of what I am liking about Threads, though. That is kind of what Threads is right now. Right. But going to your guys' point, it doesn't do what I need it to do for work.
Yeah.
Threads is fun because I get to see people say taking a shit. But I don't get to the lack of hashtags. So I can't see what you guys think about a certain topic is really annoying. And it doesn't have news. And now I don't know how your Twitters are populating, but the news on Twitter for me is relatively useless at this point.
Yeah.
Like the shit that they put on there, I'm just like, where's the news?
And it used to work so much better. Like that's the thing is it's been downgraded. And like, why are you downgrading this great service? Like I get that you have to make money, but making it worse shouldn't be part of it.
Wouldn't be part of it. Speaking of billionaires ruining things, we're in the middle of a double strike, SAG, WGA strike. And of course, the SAG strike had a bigger impact on Comic-Con because, of course, San Diego Comic-Con specifically is known for its big Hall H panels with celebrities and stuff like that. And the studios were like already kind of feeling the vibe that that wasn't going to work out. So a lot of them planned on not showing up. Roxy, you were there. For like all of it, right? Did you left maybe a couple days early, but you were like there, you were doing the whole Comic-Con thing.
Yeah, I was there for a couple of days. DJ, did you make it into the convention?
For like 20 minutes. Yeah, for like a few minutes. And it was early one of the mornings, and it was still pretty crowded on the floor. And it makes sense because they didn't know that the celebrities weren't going to show up till like the fucking days before. But I was still a little bit discouraged by how minimal the actual comics presence still was, despite that. I guess part of me had kind of been more optimistic, feeling like, well, the big studios aren't here, so maybe like we'll get more comic stuff. And I guess, you know, the sea change there wasn't enough time for that to have happened.
I thought that Artist Alley, though, was the best that it's been in the 8 years I've been there.
I didn't have a lot of time to spend in Artist Alley, so I wouldn't have had a good gauge of that.
They really, so all the other companies, the big studios, they had like very little. Lon, have you been into the convention? Have you been to Comic-Con before?
Oh, yeah, many times.
Yeah. So for anybody who hasn't, it is like DJ just showed a picture of. Just picture any convention you've ever gone to, but usually the big studios will have like their own kind of block that is very large. There will be a sign above that says their company name. You can see it from anywhere, and you go, and it's this big space. The big studios this year had tiny little booths and no big block, and the places that had bigger blocks were like the Skybounds of the world.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, this is interesting. And then Artist Alley, which is where all of the art is, the original art, was jamming. Like just the, because usually it's like an alley kind of. And this was like a, if you think of it being A, B, C, D, E, F, G, which is everything before Hall H, like maybe two full or three full letter sections were Artist Alley. It was massive.
Yeah.
When did you first go? Like, what was the first year you went to Comic-Con?
8 years ago.
So like,
and you've probably been
mid-teens, like 2014 or something, or 2015. Yeah, because I started going in, I think 2007 was the first year I went, or 08. And that was like, the tail, like this is what it used to be like, as I understand. When I started going, was like the end of this era when studios started taking over more and more of the space, and Hall H just became like, here's what movies are coming out, like the big showcase. But before then, it really was more like most of the convention floor was like Artist Alley and like booths for publishers or comic book companies or artists or writers, or, and it was a very, very different vibe.
The first year I met
the Hellboy creator Mike Mignola was just like hanging out at a table, like signing, and like chatted with me for like 10 minutes. It was like a very different vibe than it became in the years since.
Yeah, so I really did enjoy it. And DJ, you're saying that you didn't notice like more enough comic stuff. I agree with you that I thought it was going to be more comic book heavy, but there was still more than the previous years that I have seen.
Yeah.
And this year, a lot more deodorant was worn. I'll give people that. That was very exciting for me.
Yeah.
And the vibe of the con was fucking great. It was great. It was a bunch of people who were not complaining about the fact that there was no major stars doing huge Hall H panels. Like, I kind of thought that people were going to be bitching and moaning about, we spent all this money on the hotels and the flights and the da-da-da, and then now there's not this big panel that we whatever. I didn't hear anything.
Yeah.
People were just happy to be there. It was that same kind of vibe. And was it a little weird and different? Yeah. Like the press lines are different, but it was cool. A lot of the people that I saw that were doing the press lines or in hall, in different, not Hall H, but in the different ballrooms for the other panels, were art directors and, you know, like people that don't usually get to be on panels in the same kind of way. And I thought that was sick. The World Girls, we did Man on the Street interviews about what the people were aware of for the SAG and writer's strike, and if they knew how much money Zaslav was making and Iger, and asked them what they thought about the strike. And it was overwhelmingly, like the people know that are at the convention, the people knew what was going on and they think it's fucked up. And that was exciting to see.
the people outside of the convention had no idea what's going on. I mean, because we're in such a bubble that I was like, or my Uber driver was like, isn't it crazy that people think that AI shouldn't take over their jobs? And I was like, no, I don't think that's crazy. Do you think AI should take over your job?
Yeah, he's got one of those jobs. They think AI could take over.
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
No.
And he's like, I just feel like, other than, this is, I think, an exact quote of his, other than Denzel Washington, I want to watch all AI or something like that. And I was like, what?
I don't, I think, like people just, they don't, they've had such little experience with it. They're seeing just these little flashes of it. It allows your mind to create whatever you think AI is going to be.
Right.
You fill in the details.
AI, I'm hearing AI can write better scripts than people.
Right. Yeah. Like you just like, you, well, a computer, computers don't make mistakes, right? Computers are perfect, right?
Yeah.
Like,
computers
so
are.
Well, and I, therefore, and I, like when you put them in a calculator, it never gives you a wrong answer, right? So if you tell the computer, make me a show.
And I also,
ever.
And I've said this before, I feel like there's been a concerted effort, whether it's intentionally to prepare us for AI, it's definitely the kind of like making content more algorithmic. Like, listen, we're not going to talk about it here today, but I just watched all Secret Invasion. You know what I mean? Like, that's not, if there was any show better built to be like, hey, get ready for when machines just make this shit and shoot it in your brain. That shows what that's what that show is designed to do.
I also recently had this thought watching Transformers Rise of the Beasts. There are a few scenes. Did either of you see Transformers?
I did. Yeah.
There are a few scenes where individual Transformers will literally take a step forward and be like, I am Ares, or I am a bird, and I come from here. I am Optimus Primal, and I do this. And it's just, it really does. It feels like that South Park AI where they take one step forward and be like, I think Kyle should do this.
Yeah.
Step back. And then the next character steps where like, it does feel out. That movie was not made by AI, but it feels like it could have.
But again, it's like you could just feel that this is what they want it to be, fucking McDonald's, where they would just slap the meat onto the patty and shoot it to the customer.
And unfortunately,
the assembly line nature of it, and it's fortunately feel like going back to your driver, Roxy, I feel like it's working on some people. They're like, yeah, sure, fucking shoot the content into my brain.
Because when you are hearing that from people that you're listening to, and no shade to any particular podcast, but like it depends on who you're listening to. If you're listening to Joe Rogan, you're going to feel one way. If you're listening to Jordan Peterson, you're going to feel one way. You know, people have opinions on this, and you know, opinions are like assholes, as we know, everyone has one. They're just not understanding that. Like if you haven't had a breakup, if you're AI and you've never been dumped, you haven't lost anybody, you haven't gotten married or fallen for somebody, you've never had children, you've never been to a funeral, like, it's not the same. It's not the fucking same. And you're seeing all these AI right now. I think it was Disney that spent $900,000 to bring somebody in to train their most recent AI.
That's Netflix.
Netflix, thank you. And they're having issues, too, with copyright material because these AIs are getting they're copywriting.
They're being trained on, you know, everything. So they're being trained on stuff, podcast, maybe this show, like we don't know. Sarah Silverman is suing OpenAI right now because they sucked in her comedy. She's like, but I own that. That's my, you can't take my jokes, even if you don't retell them exactly the same way. You can't use them to do anything. They're mine. You have to pay me for it. That's a huge issue. It's like, well, yeah, you're calling it, oh, we're using this material to train, but it's like you're stealing it. I mean, it's like that's not, there was no extra rule in copyright, like, well, you could use these to train software. Like, that's not a thing.
Yeah. Right. So anyway, going back to the con, it was interesting to see how educated the con goers actually are, and because they're consumers and they're paying attention, as opposed to just people who weren't at the con in San Diego who had no idea what was going on. But it was also strange, like what you are and are not allowed to do. SAG put out rules that you're not allowed to cosplay if you are SAG. So seeing everybody who was cosplay, or what exactly qualifies as cosplay, right? Like, and people not knowing, okay, can I wear a t-shirt with brand on it? That's not cosplay, right? But then am I supporting the studio? There's conversations about that a lot. Same thing with parties. There was one party that branded itself one way, but really was being sponsored by a studio, which was not as like put out there. So that was a problem for some people. There were issues with certain carpets. Like, there was obviously, the strike didn't not affect the con.
Yeah.
There were things that people were concerned about. There were people at the con that people were calling scabs, some of them who probably are, some of them who probably are not. So there was definitely this like background noise of, what are we allowed to do right now? This is very bizarro land, but at the same time, still super, super fun. Another great year.
Yeah.
I feel like they're kind of, and I'm not saying people should scab or break the rules. Don't. I'm saying don't do that. But I also feel like they're putting all these rules. They're making it sound very scary on purpose, because they kind of maybe just want to scare people out of promo. Like, I don't know if there's necessarily somebody with a clipboard writing down the name of every single person who tweets positively about a TV show for the next year. I think they're trying to create a climate where we're all kind of on our heels. Am I allowed to talk about this? Just so people are circumspect about what they promote and how rigorously they do it. That's just my theory.
Yeah. I tend to agree with that. Yeah, and I think that
make the rules sound as strict as possible, even if you're not going to enforce them that strictly, just to like get the message clear of like, don't be a scab.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's our current landscape, it's a little bit tricky, and I'm not sure that SAG had a plan or has a plan to navigate that.
I wrote about this for Passion Fruit last week. They're also, it's kind of forcing us to make some definitions concrete that we all like not being concrete. Mm-hmm. Like, we have the idea of like a critic and a journalist and an entertainment reporter and an influencer and a fan and a reactor and a vlogger. And like there are like 20 different ways to talk about people who do what we all kind of do. Like people who go on the internet and talk about entertainment and media and like what we thought, like all sorts of different ways of doing it. And there aren't good definitions. It's all kind of overlapping. Like everyone, if I came up with a name, and I'm not going to call people out, but if I came up with a name and threw it out to you, people we all know, we would all probably have different definitions for like, what's the difference between what that guy does and what that lady does and what that person does.
Well, we could even use me for example, Lon. Like, if you throw,
I don't want to call anybody out, but like, you are kind of an influencer on social media, but you also do, but you also are on like podcast and you do reporting and you're a reviewer and
very like confusing. I wouldn't call myself an influencer or a critic, but I do both
do those things. Right, and you're an actor, and like that's like that's what I mean. It's so many people that we know and we work with are five different categories.
Multi-hyphenates is not something that any strikes have had to deal with in the past, typically, because usually people are in one arena. And
so they're SAG is sort of trying to say like, well, you could be an entertainment journalist, you just can't be an influencer. And it's like, what does that actually mean, like in a definitional way?
I was reading the New York Times did have an article I was reading about influencers are impacted for this, but the people they were talking to were people that get like paid like $20,000 to show up at a premiere. And I think the spirit of the law is the spirit of what they're trying to do is they don't want people doing that instead of like Margot Robbie going on hot. Like, Margot Robbie's not allowed to go on Hot Ones, so now we're going to reach out to this influencer to do that instead, that sort of thing. I don't know.
No, it's like a really big, it's tough though. This is why I'm trying to be kind to people during this time, because I got a phone call from a friend of mine, and the studios are offering like 10 times the money they usually offer to promote things.
Yeah, of course they are.
And these are people who, this is their livelihood, and they're not in the union. Do they have hopes of maybe joining one day? Yes, but they're being offered tens of thousands of dollars, which will pay their rent for, you know, not as long as it should, but a long time.
And these are people who won't benefit, even if the union does successfully negotiate everything they wanted. Well, if you're not in the union, that doesn't do you any good. You've put in all of this but they hope to benefit. You're not extracting the benefits.
They hope to benefit from that one day and hopefully right. join the union one day, you know, and that this is the fight that hopefully will affect them long term. But it sucks because I said to her, I don't think you should, if you would like to join the union, I think that this is clearly scabbing because it's taking money from the studio, right. you know?
Yeah. And that's what I would be clear. I'm not saying I think people should do this. I'm sympathize with the people who are caught in this in this bind.
Because but the studios are evil and they're offering so much money and it gets harder and harder. If you have children, if you have bills to pay, if you're hungry, like with these people who are influencers, but not journalists because, and no qualified journalist would take money from a studio anyway for doing this, but it's like, it's tough. It's tough.
Tricky. And everybody I know is we're all doing our best to try and figure it out because at the end of the day, we do support what the strike represents.
I mean, that's to me, my philosophy has been like, look, I'm in the WGA. It's been a while since I've done a WGA gig. My lapse, but I am a WGA member. So yeah, I'm trying to like do my job, but not excessively promote. I've kind of set my own sort of parameters because I really do support the people who are striking, and I really do want to have solidarity with them and support them. And so I feel like I'm trying to talk about it a lot and talk more about the strike and what's going on with that than like how great whatever I'm watching on Paramount Plus is. I feel like if I do that, I'm sort of doing my part.
I think you and I are in kind of I feel like I'm closer to you on that line. I'm not a part of any union, although if I was, you know, wouldn't mind being part of the WGA at some point. That'd be nice. Or the DGA if I get there, whatever. Anyway, similarly, it's like, you know, you just try. When I see something, I'm like, do I feel like I'm carrying water for the studio here? Or am I just like observing whatever and just making that judgment call? And if I fuck up, y'all can yell at me about it. Cause I'm not trying to be a dick, you know, just trying to, especially people in our space, studios aren't knocking on my door offering to pay me thousands of dollars to do shit. Right. So I'm just kind of doing some variation of what I've always done because whatever, but you know, we're all making our best judgment. But there will be a link in the description. If you want to support those striking, check that out. We do support the strike. We do support with their equitability. We support labor. We support all that stuff over here. So check all that out. One of the open questions I've heard mixed things on, which leads us to our next topic, is the desire of, you know, because I've heard some things that like, no, we still want the movies to do well. You know, obviously, you know, you think about something like Barbie, which is a female led film. Notoriously, studios will do anything to like avoid making more of those. I'm thinking about Blue Beetle coming out in a few months. At first, I don't know if it's the first, but it's one of the few Hispanic led superhero movies. You know, there's beyond putting money in the Zaslavs of the world's pocket, it does benefit communities, right? And so like the idea of do we want the studios to feel the loss of not having access to their actors, but you know, there's, I don't know whether we want the movies to do well or not. Fortunately for Barbie and Oppenheimer, they seem to have done really fucking great over Barbenheimer weekend. Together they grossed more than $511 million worldwide. $235 million of that was domestic. This is the first time two movies have opened to those numbers, $100 million for Barbie and $5 million for Oppenheimer at the same time. Yeah, I got a bunch of stats here. I don't know if they matter, but they did really well.
It's the first time in history one movie opened at $100 million and the number two movie opened over $50 million. That's never happened before in the same weekend. That's crazy.
Yeah.
I think it's a really difficult question to answer right now, DJ, because I'm having these conversations with my friends too about how we want things to perform right now. Because at the end of the day, I feel like if I was a studio exec, which clearly I'm not, but I look at success and think, wow, I should pay Noah Baumbach and Greta Gerwig and Margot Robbie and Simu Liu and Ryan Gosling and Issa Rae, I should pay them a lot of money because they, you know, I can't sit here and say they haven't made me $1 billion. Yeah. Like
I would think that that would be proving the value of not having AI.
Yeah.
And the value of making sure on the next project, like the, because Greta Gerwig is still an up and coming. I mean, she's amazing, but yeah, you know, we don't talk about her in the same conversations that we talk about like a Spielberg, right? She's
this first big studio picture.
So, and same thing with Noah. Like, those are people that we want to see succeed and that clearly have earned spots in their field.
Yeah.
So on the one hand, I'm just like, if movies right now tank, it almost proves the studios like we should switch it up. We had such a bad summer. We should go all AI. These actors don't deserve their money.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, I'm not an studio exec. I don't get how the fuck they're thinking. And somehow, some way, the more people who see movies right now, the more I feel like they're like, see, we did this and now we have all this money and we can sit on it and we can bleed you guys out because thank you for your money and we're going to keep it. And now the strikes are going to go on until February because we all need your dollars. Like, I think that there's two sides.
I think the big thing that we have to talk about in terms of like how long they can last is it's really two tiers. Like, yeah, we think of AMPTP as this one big group, the studios and the streamers, and they're all together. But it's really, there's the tech companies that bought up media brands, your Amazon, your Apple, your Netflix. And then there's the legacy studio companies, NBC Universal, Disney, Paramount, Lionsgate, which owns Stars, AMC. Those companies, they're in a very different place. Like, sure, Netflix can kick up their heels and be like, well, we'll make more stuff in Spain and Thailand for the next 6 months and we'll save a bunch of money. Yeah. That, you know, and they've got a content pipeline probably for the next 6 months. They're fine to wait until next year to make a deal. Don't come back to the table until then. Apple and Amazon, this isn't even their primary business. Like, Amazon will just sell more soccer balls and foot cream to get them through or whatever.
Yeah.
So, but like, if you're Universal, if you're Paramount, like, you really can't wait and you can't afford to just take money from this summer and be like, well, we're good for a while. Like, that doesn't, they need stuff to be on their TV networks and these streaming platforms they just launched and back in theaters by next year. And if 2024 doesn't have enough new movies and movie theaters all start to close, that's terrible for Paramount. Netflix doesn't care, but yeah, Paramount, where are they going to show you Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 2? Yeah. So I really feel like everything you're saying is correct, Roxy. Like, it is really hard to say because we're dealing with this plague field where the companies all have different priorities. Like, I feel like there's a version of this where this is the end of the AMPTP. And like, some companies are going to, like, Sony is not going to have a choice. They're going to have to come to the table and make a deal with writers, or else like Sony Pictures Entertainment goes away.
Yeah.
Whereas Netflix, maybe they don't want to come back to the table until 2024, 25. So like, it's so hard to say because there's even that added level of complication. But like, yeah, I agree with everything you're saying. It is really hard to know what the best thing to do. Right now, everything I'm hearing is like, they're not calling for a boycott, so keep going to movies, keep your Netflix subscription. But that, like, yeah, I don't know if that's the answer.
No.
At some point, they might ask for a consumer boycott. I would not say that that's off the table, but they have not done that yet because they clearly don't think that that's the best plan of action yet. I don't know, Lon, how long you've been in the WGA, but I was talking to Kate Mulligan, whose husband Dickie is a captain for the Writers Guild, and she was talking about one of the big talking points he continues to speak on, and that they're hopeful for, at least in the WGA, is what happened during the last strike, which is that once one company kind of folds, one studio kind of folded and was like, okay, we will give you guys what it is that you're looking for. It started with the smaller studios. So I guess at the time it was about what was she telling me? Everybody had fired their agents because all the writers had fired their agents because the agents were being part of a packaging deal and they were making money based on how much money the movie made. So they weren't getting the best deals for their writers. And so a lot of the studios were like, we're going to hang tough together. But then once one folded And they saw that everybody was going to these smaller agencies, and they were making the deals with these studios, then all of the major agencies like WME, CAA, they all folded and were like, okay, we won't take packaging deals anymore. And that's what they're hopeful happens with all the studios, right? That it will start with one of the smaller studio, not smaller studios. Already we're seeing A24, but like if enough of those studios, and then we'll see the actual AMPTP studios.
Because those are the companies where they're, you know, like if you're AMC, there are 100 different problems all coming for you right now. Like everybody's ditching their cable subscriptions, and AMC was relying on cable TV revenue to keep them going. The ad market has collapsed, and they're counting on selling ads on cable and on streaming. And so it's just like, AMC Plus launched, but it's hard to get people to pay for a bespoke AMC Plus subscription when there's all these bigger, more touted options out there with bigger shows. And so it's just like a perfect storm coming down on those. Like, those companies can't wait years to keep making new shows. They're going to run out of shows soon.
Yeah. And you pointed out, Lon, before we went to air, Netflix is riding high off of reruns of Suits, basically, which also, by the way, makes me nervous about the. It takes me back to your driver, Roxy, and this whole AI conversation, because so much of content is enjoyed like for background noise for people, which makes no sense to me. Like when I'm watching something, I don't turn something on just to have it on. That's not how my brain works.
I think it's maybe an age thing. Like this was when I was a kid in the 80s. That's just people just had their TV on all the day, and they were not people were not watching it. It was it was just noise in the house. It was just like you put it on, so there was something, it was lively or whatever. And so I think a lot of us just came of age with that and still do it just force of habit. I'm not me, but a lot of people my age.
Yeah. And so it's just
the opposite too, though, Lon. I feel like it's the older generations that keep it on, and the young generation too, where like whatever they're doing in the background is a mindless kind of.
Right.
Yeah. They've all been diagnosed with ADHD. They need a bunch of stuff going on at the same time.
It's always four screens at once. And sure. I mean, that's generational. Did you guys see, I think it was The Onion, where they had that special new movie theaters for people under 25, and the theater screen was actually split into four columns, and it was like Barbie here and Oppenheimer here, and then a TikTok video here, and then like a game over here. And it was like that's what people would want.
Yeah. I hate
I'm so scared that's not gonna stay in The Onion and is going to
it's
get
it's gonna be in reality.
Real, yeah.
But
sometimes
like
you see stuff and it's like, oh, this is they're so different. That generation is so different for me, like I can't even predict what they're going to be into. Like the NPC TikTok thing is just like,
oh my God. I was reading an article that was kind of sympathetic to the whole NPC thing. And it's like, but again, it goes back to that. Like, I don't like noise. I like to focus on something. Anyway, that's me. That's how my brain works.
You just didn't grow up with that your whole life. And
I don't need constant input all the time. Silence is okay, everybody. Anyway, spend some time with your own thoughts every once in a while. It is interesting how companies like Netflix, these more tech companies, are kind of forced other studios into this, the whole gold rush to have an app. And now I guess Netflix is, I was reading stuff that they're this whole clamping down on sharing passwords is actually making them more money and all this stuff. So it's this weird, like they forced everybody in this crisis that they're going to be fine in. And now and meanwhile, what is it? Ted Sarandos, is he the Netflix guy? He's out there going listen, I grew up in a union family. I know what it's like. Get the fuck out of here, man.
The cable carriage system that we used to have was like fine-tuned. It was messy and crazy and chaotic. Nobody liked the way cable worked, but it had been fine-tuned over decades and was like a pretty impressive system that really allowed all of these channels to flourish. Because the idea was like more popular cable networks like ESPN or Discovery would kind of like cover for the smaller, less popular ones like the Outdoor Life Network. And so you could have a variety of programming of different levels of interest and niche on one cable package, because the more expensive channels were kind of supplementing for the smaller channels. Yeah. And it was all just because of carriage deals. You were paying your cable provider that was then paying some of the money it got from you out to all these different companies that ran these cable networks. And by coming in, and Netflix came in and said, forget that system. We're just going to come right directly in your homes. And everybody was like, that sounds great. I want to do that too. So they took a hatchet to the entire cable carriage system. They got everybody to cut the cord. They destroyed this entire infrastructure we'd built up over like 50 years of doing business. And now they don't know how to make money anymore. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, you had the thing you just destroyed was a great way to make money. We used to pay for a lot of TV shows that way. Suits. That was what made Suits possible.
Well, and you brought up the
popular show on streaming.
Yeah, I can't remember if you brought it up before on, we were on air or not, but the idea that there's 9 seasons of it, and like Netflix won't let a show last past 3.
They can't afford to, whereas USA had no problem paying for 9 seasons because a season of Suits was valuable for them because they could sell ads against it.
Yeah.
Suits was syndicated by, after season 5, Suits is syndicated. You could put it wherever. You could sell ads against it. That's going to make you money forever. And that's why all of these shows from the old system, Big Bang Theory, Friends, Seinfeld, they're still beloved and watched today. And like, I don't, Wednesday was good. I liked it. But I don't think in 20 years people are going to be watching Wednesday. They just don't have that staying power because they don't last long enough.
Yeah, yeah. Going back to the before we wrap up, going back to the Barbenheimer of it all, I will say I think in the long term, the success of Barbie and Oppenheimer is good for movies in general because, and obviously, Roxy, as you I think you pointed out really well, like who knows what these, speaking of Suits, who knows what these Suits feel, think when they see this stuff. But I feel like the message is clear. They just greenlit a Polly Pocket movie, didn't they? They didn't learn anything. But it's like, hey, what if we did, what if not everything was the same thing? What if it wasn't all Marvel? What if like, here's an R-rated historical drama about the guy that made the atomic bomb. Here's a movie based off of a doll IP that really shouldn't be made into a movie, but Greta Gerwig found a way to make it fucking work. And you know what I mean? I hope that the fact that like stuff like Ant-Man didn't do so great. A lot of these big IP brands, fucking Indiana Jones didn't do so well. I've heard mixed things on Mission Impossible. The fact that this is something, as far as movies go, that's fresh, did really well. I hope the lesson is, well, shit, audiences want new things. You know, we can't just plug in Oppenheimer's book into an AI and have it shoot out a movie. We need to rely on the creatives for that. And long term, that sends a good signal. Obviously, that requires people to pay attention to the right things. But I hope that that's the message that comes across. I hope long term it's a good thing.
Yeah, I'm super with you, DJ. I just feel zero confidence in my ability to predict what these execs feel.
Yeah.
For the exact same reason that, even though he's not a big studio exec, but why when Elon says things, we're like, what? Like, yeah. I don't get it. Mm-hmm. I don't get it. And even I think I'm pretty business savvy. I think what you guys are doing is bad for business. I don't see a world in which what you guys are doing is good for business. So, yeah. I don't know how they're interpreting that. I just don't know.
Maybe we should hire people that have long-term planning skills. That's my, instead of short-term gains all the time, maybe thinking past tomorrow. Lon,
My one hope, I feel like the thing that anybody should be able to see that I think no matter there are other things going on too. I'm not saying this is the only lesson, but I think one clear lesson is the idea we've been coming back to for the last, let's say 10, 12 years, that it's really about a title and a brand and a character and an IP. That's what gets people into a theater. Yeah. The movie itself, secondary, the trailer, the marketing, all that casting, all that other stuff, secondary. The thing you're selling is this is the new Pixar. This is the new Marvel. This is the new Minions. This is the new X, you know, like that. That's been the thinking. And I'm not saying it was even wrong, like for a while there, especially when movies were doing so well in China and overseas, like you got to go for the big, like whose picture is on the poster? Like what's the tagline? Like we need to make this as easy to communicate as possible. But I think that what we're seeing now is that era is sort of done. Audiences are kind of done showing up just because like, oh, I know who Captain America is. I'm going to go see the new Captain America. They can wait for streaming for that. And now you have to do the work. Like, you can't just lay back on the laurels of the IP is going to bring people in. You actually have to sell people on this movie in particular. And I mean, I think that the Mission Impossible of it is really fascinating, because to me, that is like, we assumed a lot of it was Tom Cruise. That was the Top Gun Maverick magic, was audiences everywhere. Just, they can't get enough of this Tom Cruise guy.
Yeah. But
if Mission Impossible didn't do that well, that was, no, it was something about the way they sold Top Gun Maverick specifically that made people so excited. And I think that is a good takeaway, no matter how you slice it, because it means we got to go back to thinking about individual movies as the product, not one little piece of the franchise, which is the product.
Yeah.
But now the movie itself, you can't just be like, well, it's Ant-Man 3. They'll go see it because they liked Ant-Man 2 and they're waiting for Ant-Man 4. Now they got to be like, what is it about Ant-Man 3 that makes people want to go see Ant-Man 3 specifically? And like, I feel like that's good. That's a move in the positive direction.
Yeah, you can't just make a Polly Pocket movie with Lena Dunham and assume that it's going to have the same cultural splash as Barbie. You're not going to be able. Because
everybody's got to get into the Mattelverse. I think we're not all getting into every verse anymore. You've got to really sell me on this thing, not just Indiana Jones is in it.
Yeah, and Lynn Kim says in the chat, we got to have more Everything Everywhere All at Once's or more Elementals.
And Elemental is a great example of a movie I think they didn't have a lot of faith in and didn't try to sell as hard as they could, and then audiences discovered it and liked it all on their own. Kind of a lackluster first weekend, but now it's going to hit 400-500 million in theaters. Like, it's a hit.
It's a good movie. it's a good movie. And I also think, I was talking to this about a friend of like, I think, you know, the new Indiana Jones was made for $300 million, pretty notoriously, and Everything Everywhere All at Once was made for $25 million, and it's like that should.
I like that Indiana Jones movie, all right. I thought it was fine, but $300 million.
And that's the thing. Not all of that $300 million isn't ending up on screen. A lot of that is padding execs' pockets. That's how that number gets so high.
Did you see that Eric Idle tweet? That was one of the best things I've seen. Is he said, one time I asked a film producer friend, when I was making movies in the 70s and 80s, movies cost $1 million. Yeah. How come they cost $200 million today? And he said, well, it's a lot easier to steal $1 million if the movie costs $200 million than if it costs $2 million.
Yep.
And it's like, that's a lot of what we're seeing. Yeah.
That's what we're seeing. And so shareholders out there, all the shareholders that listen to this, maybe you will get a little scrutiny to these CEOs and execs you're paying $25 million to. Maybe put a little spyglass to what they're doing. Maybe they're not making you as much money as you think.
Secret Invasion cost $212 million. Did you
see
that?
Yes. Boo. Boo to that.
Well, they did a lot of rewrites. Like, I don't care if you had to film that thing four times. That's too much money.
It's too much money. Boo. Anyway, a lot of shady shit. And Roxanne, you and I discussed this a little bit last week. I do hope it provides a little bit more scrutiny to the execs. I don't think that's the world we live in. But listen, hope springs eternal.
Do you guys think that streaming services and all entertainment should legally have to release their numbers?
Yes,
absolutely. I think it's crazy that we don't make them do that. Like the SEC, like, they've got to have all this transparency about their business practices, but then they could just be like, well, people watched 2.4 billion minutes of the first 30 minutes of this in the first 5 days. It was all it's like, what are you talking about? Like, just give us the number.
Yeah.
And that's a big part of what's keeping these negotiations stalled, is that the talent needs to know how things are doing so they know how to negotiate for their next gig.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Anyway.
It's such a no-brainer.
Yeah. I agree. Did you see Seth Rogen talking about this? He's like,
no.
It makes – Seth Rogen was saying he gets, like, depressed. Like, he's finding it emotionally very difficult that none of his work, he doesn't have any sense of – achievement anymore. He's like, I make these things and then there's no way for me to know if people liked it or watched it or who liked it or how much they liked it. He's like, I used to get data that was like, this is the demographic breakdown. These are the people who watch the most. And he's like, I knew everything about what people were in or how people were interacting with his work. He's like, today I know nothing. It's a black box and I make stuff and it just goes out in the world and I never hear about it again.
Yeah.
It's like, even not from a business perspective, just from a personal creative perspective, it's a tragedy.
Yeah. He's a good producer. He's got a movie coming out next week that I got to see early, and it's very good. It's a good movie. If you want to support good movies, check it out. Anyway.
They're coming out of the shadows, that movie.
Yeah, exactly. 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 Lon, before we go, remind the kids where they can find you and what they should be checking out from you.
Oh, yeah. X is the best place to follow me.
follow Lon on X.
X.com, your favorite app and mine, at L-O-N-S. And I mentioned Passion Fruit. It's a website that's published by The Daily Dot, but it's its own thing. It is just a sort of news and information and community for, you know, digital creators, internet creators, people who post things for a living. And it's a new site, so come check it out. I write a weekly column for that.
Check that out. There will be links in the description. Roxy, what should the fans be? You were mentioning the World Girls did your Man on the Street stuff. If they wanted to check out that World Girls stuff, where are they going to go?
Yeah, you can find us on youtube.com/theworldgirls. That will be dropping next month. We're doing a lot of strike coverage, also a lot of alien talk.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, I've converted them. I know I can convert you.
So. Next week, everybody tune in. Maybe next week we won't be able to talk about the real good Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie, but we will be able to talk about aliens. So,
which is, if you think about it, significantly more important.
If true.
Also, Michael Bay's version of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Aliens.
Aliens. So check out next week for big alien talk. Roxy, wait, are you more X or are you more Threads?
I've been doing that shitty thing where you post the same thing in both places.
I don't know that's shitty. I think that's just covering your bases. I feel like that's just covering your bases.
Wherever you are, I'm posting in both spots.
I keep fucking posting on X. I really want to leave. I really just want it to be dead. But I just, you know, that positive reinforcement. People keep liking my X's on X. And so I guess I'm staying here for right now. You can find me on X and everywhere that matters at DJ Talks Trash. You can find this show at Only Stupid Answers, but on X.
Yank out the vowels from stupid.
And we will see you all next time. Bye, everybody.